Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and hope everybody had a great weekend and relaxed and watched some football, some pretty good games. Notre Dame got their ass kicked, and it figured. I mean, if you listened to the Sporting Edge, you would have heard the prediction. But so here we are in the same position we were before the weekend. We have a market that is totally dependent on you know who. And, of course, the you-know-who and gang meet on Tuesday, Wednesday. And, of course, Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern, there'll be the much-anticipated double talk. We're going to do nothing. We're going to sit on our ass and continue to watch and chirp and talk about what we might do someday if we get the chance. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. But at some point we might do, we don't know. And that is basically the typical, the typical work we get from those people at that group, which we're not mentioning their name. But at the end, it'll be the same double talk. We are dependent on, I don't know. The dependency will depend on if it is possible that this might happen next time when we see, but we're not sure. And of course, but we do know that nothing is going to happen major to swing the election. I mean, that is really what we come down to right now. Now, there is many reasons to believe that nothing is going to happen anyways, because depending on who you listen to about the economy and about the growth and about what's going on, you get many different answers. And overall, I mean, you know, I don't know, I guess maybe I'm backwards, but I look at it from, well, if I can't borrow money, if I can't get a loan, which means I can't go into business, then the only way that I could get that loan, if they would raise rates, which goes back down into, you know, the free market price discovery model, which for a while we've been away from. And you know, we'll see if eventually that will change. And I would suggest that it will. I think that there's just too many things going on here. And throw the election in the middle of it. That would indicate that there's not much going to happen here. Now, the markets, you know, had another, basically another one-day sell-off. But I think the interesting thing we see now is we're seeing some price volatility come back into the market, which is always a good start and a good sign. You know, price volatility, movement back and forth is really what traders look for. Okay. You know, investors would prefer the markets do nothing and just kind of climb up gradually. But we all know there is not a tremendous amount of good news out there. However, the bond markets are raising rates themselves slowly, but of course we've seen the 10-year bounce off of that 150 level again and start to rally a little bit. We are seeing, you know, the bond futures sell off, and of course those all are indications that rates may rise on their own. And of course, there's a lot of things that are not making a lot of sense around the globe. But of course, anytime you have manipulation, that would be something that would certainly show us that there is a problem, and that really it appears that all of the central banks are working together kind of in harmony to work this situation, and basically we're getting nowhere. And while we're getting nowhere, we're continuing to see the destruction of small business. We are continuing to see the destruction of the independents. We are seeing more companies being part of the too big to fail campaign. And, you know, of course, we know that even the powerhouses eventually have problems. I mean, you could take the New York Yankees. I mean, you know, they are obviously the too big to fail of the baseball world, and the Dodgers. And of course, they still do fail, and they create ripples throughout the baseball world. And, you know, everybody's worried about the Yankees. Well, you know, of course, now baseball is just a big monster sport, but, you know, they keep talking about the small markets and how they're being destructed. And of course, we can look at that in the business view and talk about how the small markets are being, you know, kind of destructed based on, you know, what's going on. I mean, again, you know, who's going to go open, you know, a small convenience store again, or, you know, a small clothing store? Nobody is, because they can't compete. So this goes back to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, competition. You know, if you cannot compete, why would you go into business? And that is something that we've now seen has become more regular, is the competition. It's just like, you know, in the oil business, okay, I think that, you know, part of the manipulation going on there is the ability to try to put out the small guy. You know, the small guys, you know, sold bonds and borrowed money and did all these things to become, you know, known as wildcatters. And they're, when you bring prices down, it makes it harder for them to meet their obligations. And when they can't meet their obligations, they get forced out of business. Well, what happens? You get the pieces left over that somebody can come and, you know, like the vulture, and take it away. And I think that's, you know, kind of what's happening here, is we continue to see the vultures come in and try to knock out the little guy. Now, you know, I don't know why we want to do that. I think that, you know, the competition, the competitive world, is better for everybody, including the big companies. I mean, I don't know. I guess that they don't see it that way, but I see that competition creates action, creates jobs, creates everything, and allows the world to rotate, keeping everybody in good stead versus the few. And to me, that becomes overall a bigger problem when you continue to wipe out the little guy, when you continue to wipe out the competition of the world. Because without competition, we don't have to worry about quality. And that, to me, becomes the next problem. Because, hey, you know, I can make a lot of garbage, make a lot of money, and continue to have people have to come buy from me because there is nobody to compete with me to make it better. So the whole thing, from a business standpoint, is kind of ugly. Now, again, it will resolve itself out. But in the meantime, they're going to torture and continue to double talk us to death as they continue to try to figure out what the hell they're going to do, which is usually nothing, and they'll fail, and then we'll have to come in and pick up the pieces. But at the end of the day, that's the way it is right now, and we will continue to fight on and move on. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. You know, when you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm gets you the download of the show every day. We're going to step out here for a break. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. We'll be back right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
All right, boys, follow me. Mostly in A.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for the one, the only, the extremely talented and now podcaster, Jane King, Lila Mexmedia, The Kitchen Report, and now Finances for Children. What's up, Jane?
Yes. Thanks, Todd. And yes, we did our first podcast this week, and I have this wonderful, amazing guest. Don't know if you know him, Todd Horowitz.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. And I just, you know, you and I both felt so strongly, and Kim Mustin, who was also on the podcast, also strongly about teaching kids about money and just, you know, sort of the common sense stuff, just about how to handle it and delaying gratification and saving. And I mean, it's really important stuff that kids need to know.
Now, don't you think that, I mean, not only do kids need to know, but don't adults need to know? Don't you think, I personally believe that most people kind of hide from finances and you know, they kind of duck, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. I mean, they'd rather talk about sex than about finances. I mean, it's like a dirty word. I mean, you see some of the commercials they're playing now, and you know, people accept things that maybe they shouldn't be accepting. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, no, I think it's one of the most emotional, like, just ridden topics out there. I mean, it's still, I believe, the number one cause of divorce, money, and, you know, it's really hard. But I think that's part of kind of what I'm trying to do in my own little way with these podcasts and other things I do, is just get people comfortable with it. It's okay to go into a bank and you know, talk to the banker, and I'm talking like little kids here, and to talk about money, talk about where it comes from and how's this going to work, and when things get tight, and hey, we got a little extra, and I try to teach my kids the value of things a lot.
Go to the
grocery store, and they have those machines there. You put like a quarter in, and you get this like stupid little, you know, plastic thing that was like a penny. And I was like, guys, do you realize how much this probably cost? It's like a penny. And I said, they bought them in bulk, so they got them super cheap. I'm making 25 times the amount of money on this. And they kind of like actually get it a little. And they go, okay, I don't really want that now. So that's the kind of, there's little lessons here and there is what I'm trying to do.
Well, I'm the biggest offender of that, because I buy Pepsi every day, you know, out of the fountain, that probably the cup costs more than what goes in it. And they're making about 100 times margin on it. But you sure you want to have people talk to a banker? I mean, I don't know if they're exactly reputable these days, right? I mean,
well, they like the lollipops at the bank. That's their big thing. Here's something, Todd. I'm teaching them right, because they go to the bank, and the banker comes out, and they bring in this big bowl of lollipops. The idea is take one each. They are stuffing their pockets with lollipops, and I'm like, you know what? I have no problem with that. It's a bank.
Maybe they can sell them, right? They can take them out. So,
great idea. We'll take it one step further.
What did you think about the Wells Fargo thing? What's your take on all that?
Oh, my goodness. It's horrible. Horrible. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't do any banking at Wells Fargo. They're not really an East Coast bank, Midwest bank, although they've expanded. But I can't imagine having an account opened up without my permission to generate fees. Ridiculous. And I just, you know, as I covered that story, of course, quite a bit. And my first instinct was like, this is just, you know, this squeeze for sales and the squeeze for profits and shareholder value, and it has gone too far. I mean, people are doing stuff like that. Everybody just needs to take a step back. And when you're lying and you're cheating and you're stealing, they were stealing, I think. I mean, I feel comfortable saying that was theft.
Well, I mean, it was theft. It was creating things that didn't exist, and they weren't really bilking the customers, but they were bilking the bank, which eventually bilks the customers like everything else. I mean, now here, I'm going to say this, and I'll say it out loud. I contend that the banks do things like this all the time, and they're notorious for doing things like this. I mean, I go back to the J.P. Morgan whale trade. You remember that one?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Now I'm going to say this. I don't believe that was the first time they ever made that trade. I believe that was the first time they got caught making that trade, because it was a big loser. But in the meantime, they probably made, you know, if they paid a $5 billion fine, they probably made $50 billion doing that trade until they finally got caught, and then it became a big deal. And I think that more banks do things that bring in money, and it's only a problem when they get caught, because, in my opinion, the regulators only go after the low-hanging fruit. They're not going after Wells Fargo. I mean, they're making a big deal about it, but at the end of the day, Wells Fargo will pay their big fine, whatever it happens to be, and that'll be the end of it.
$185 million. I mean, it really wasn't that much money.
Well, that's what we know about, though. Remember, it's what we know and then what really happened. And I'm not saying that there's more, but I just watch all this all the time. And you know, the regulators, all these government agencies that go after all these people, the big guys never go to jail. They never have any problems. They have to pay the fine. They pay the fine. So if the fine is bigger than what they made, who pays for it? You and I pay for it. The middle guys pay for it. I mean, that's what I see. What do you think? Do you have an opinion there?
Well,
that you care to share?
Things. So the CEO, Wells Fargo, John Stumpf, I mean, says, I'm not leaving. I mean, he takes responsibility for it, but he's like, I'm not leaving my position. And I'm like, come on. I mean, I really think there should be some more accountability for something like that. And then that $185 million, so I did the story. I was very careful to look, where is this money going? There is some going to customers, but a lot of it's going to the attorney generals and the Department of Justice and all these groups that sued them. And they always make it extremely difficult for customers to get the money. And, you know, you got to file, you got to show this, you got to show that. It ends up being $12. And, you know, it's unfair the way it's all disseminated. And I just, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, people are upset at banks. I mean, this makes total sense. And yet you're right. I mean, if Wells Fargo was doing it, we may see some other banks coming clean as well with us.
Well, I mean, I just, they're just, you know, the banks have far too much power. The big banks. I mean, they don't even take care of their own. I mean, they stick it to the little banks. You know, if you ever looked at the ratio of how they, you know, they kind of settle that FDIC insurance for everybody. I mean, they're all trying to put the little banks out of business. And I'm upset with the fact that all we keep doing pretty much around every business is knocking the little guy out, and everybody's becoming too big to fail. And really what that really does is that hurts us, the American consumer, because when you eliminate competition, you eliminate price, you eliminate fair price, and all of a sudden you end up with a big mess because we don't get the advantage of the price. And that, I think, is a bigger problem down the road. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of that going on. I mean, you know, Amazon, I mean, they're becoming like, you know, this huge behemoth worldwide now. I mean, Jeff Bezos, the third richest man in the world, he's controlling everything from retail to cloud to music to books. I mean, it's just, but you know, it's interesting because I'm a small business owner. I work in television, which is dominated by like five huge companies. And I've worked at some of those huge companies, and so I know what their weaknesses are. And their weaknesses are they're not nimble, they're not customer friendly, they're arrogant, they don't have a lot of people that really work very hard. I mean, there's some there that do, but some people are like, yeah, I'm just here, and I'm leaving. And so my philosophy is I outwork them, I'm extremely nimble, I'm creative. These companies are not creative. They don't take risks. They're huge, and they want to stay there, but they don't want to take any risks at all to jeopardize that. So those are their weaknesses, and that's what I try to do is take advantage of those. We had, you know, like I was doing a report in Texas, and it was like a minute and 30 seconds long. And the guy who's in charge of all the broadcasting in Texas at Sinclair stations was like, we need to make it more like a minute. And I was like, okay, done. Next day, done. And he was like, I can't believe that. I've never had that happen before. And I was like, what's the big deal? I just write a shorter script and we do it the next day. I mean, he acted amazed. And that's just a little example of the kind of stuff that I try to do to survive. And it's working pretty well.
No, I understand. Like I said, I understand all that. I find it hard. I mean, because basically I wrote a couple of weeks ago, you know, too big to fail, Walmart and Amazon, because in the brick and mortar space, it's Walmart because they put every little guy out of business. And not only they put out the competition at the retail sector, but they put out their competition at the wholesale sector, too, because they bring them in for a couple of months or a couple of years. They use their money is what they're really doing while they use other people, and then they put them out of business. And I don't know. I just, to me, it's kind of become, you know, everybody's becoming too big to fail, and the little guy don't have much of a chance at the moment. Not that we won't have it again. I mean, I'm obviously a small business guy myself, so I'm just a big fan of small business and competition. And I think the government, the way it's acting, is trying to eliminate all that. What are your thoughts as we close?
Well, I think so. I mean, this has really been kind of something that's been building for 20, 25 years now. And I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing this election so non-traditional. is because a lot of people sense that this is going on there, that they're the ones that are getting screwed over by Washington and by companies, and they want somebody in there to shake things up. And he was telling the truth, and that's why we're seeing Donald Trump so competitive.
And that's the world, according to Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, the podcaster of Teaching Kids Finance. Jane King, you're the best. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Todd.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure when you miss an episode, it's libertytalk.fm to get the download. And we will see you back here right after the break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter. Demeter Research, the man is on fuego, on fire, and of course he continues to lay him out. What's up, Matt?
Not a lot. How are you doing, Todd?
I'm doing good. So, you made, I don't know, about 7 or 8 weeks ago, I can't remember the exact date, but you said that the Treasury rally was over, and so far so good. They continue to hammer him and push him down, and What's your thought of the bond market in here?
Well, now I think we're getting a little bit oversold, and we're due for a bounce, but that's really all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a new high. I would say, I'm just looking for a bounce. I think there's a little bit more downside to go here before that begins, but we're getting close.
Now, you're looking for really probably, a sellable bounce, because much longer term, they're looking for this to break down and really go down quite a bit, which would obviously tie with higher interest rates. But for now, you're looking for just an oversold bounce. I mean, hell, I know you don't use a 30, but the 30 is down, 12 full points from its high. And that's certainly, I mean, if you put it in real trading terms, that's $12,000 a contract. That's a pretty big whack. So certainly we could see a bounce, which would make sense, and then and more of a sell-off. What else are you looking at, just in a general overview? I mean, we're starting to get some true price volatility, which we have not had for quite a while, and that's usually a start of something. What are you seeing?
Yeah, no, I think that the volatility spike that we saw on Friday about a week ago, and then last week, Monday, I think that's just the first of, a bigger trend. So basically, I'm looking for volatility to ramp back up, but the volatility may sell off for a little bit here while markets either chop sideways or lift a little bit. But I think we've probably seen the highs in the S&P, and I have declining resistance now coming in at 22.05, so that's now going to get in the way of anything higher than that. And I think we're going to see another volatility spike coming soon. I can't predict exactly when it's going to come, but I think we've just seen the beginning.
And I thought you could tell me down to the minute when it was going to come. What the hell's going on here?
Right.
But I mean, so overall, your views from the charting standpoint, we still see that the The banks and everybody are still holding fairly big short positions, but they have trimmed them down a little bit from what you saw last week.
Right. So last week we were up to 100. The commercials, the banks were up to 136,000 VIX contracts, and that was basically the largest we've ever seen. And you know, with that volatility spike, you would think they would have taken quite a bit off, and they really didn't. They only took off 12,000 contracts. So now we're down to 100. They're down to 124,000 contracts, which is still, it's 20,000 contracts more than they owned prior to, you know, last year's sell-off in August, which was, you know, a 12% sell-off. So it's still a huge position for them. So you would expect that they expect more volatility.
Well, and I think we should naturally expect more volatility. I think. You know, I know you're a technician, but everything aside, I mean, we are reaching levels that we've never seen before. I mean, you know, this market continues to push forward, even though I know that last week many of the foreign markets all sold off a little bit last week, even though we managed to eke out a gain, and basically the gain was built on the huge Monday rally and basically dribbled around the West, and even the triple witching expiration was a little bit disappointing compared to what it usually is like. What did you see?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I saw. I think the U.S. is probably going to be stronger than the rest of, you know, internationally. The rest of foreign markets are going to be weaker than we are. We're short emerging markets. We've been saying for a while that, you know, they've been really very overbought, and the banks have been heavily shorting emerging markets. I think that just continues, but they continue to the downside. Europe looks about the same, not quite as bearish as emerging markets, but they look to go further south. Pretty much anything, you know, I look at right now, including the Nikkei, you know, they all look bearish.
The world looks heavy. I mean, yeah. From a true business standpoint, you know, just regular business, the world does look heavy. But so when we look at the big picture, I still believe the dollar is going to make another run here. And I don't know I know at one point you thought it was going to go lower before going higher. I don't think it's going lower anymore. I think it's going to go, I'm saying, in my opinion, the dollar goes back to the buck and then maybe starts to sell off. What do you see?
Could be. I think, you know, the only thing that I didn't like about what's going on in the dollar is that I had a support line that was, I just wanted to see it get hit, and we didn't miss it by much. So, you know, it was not quite my margin of error, but we did come close. So, yeah, we could rally instead. I guess if, you know, we're looking at the Fed on Wednesday, if they don't raise rates, we might get, you know, a swift move down, and then we might get a kick back up. But either way, I mean, you know, I think it looks good for a rally. You know, if we're talking about 2 months from now, I think it will be higher.
I just think, and I know you don't follow necessarily the news. I mean, you're basically, the news you follow turns up in the charts, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. But I look at it and I go, I look around the globe and I look at the things that are affected by the dollar, and they're all pricing in a much bigger dollar move. In my opinion, again, I don't have any factual basis. I'm just watching it. And, you know, that's what I've seen. That to me, they've overpriced a much bigger dollar move, and I think the dollar will make that move and put them up there. And because I think that when you look at all these other products, you know, one of the things that we see in today more than ever is, you know, the dollar denominated things that go on. You know, one market will always anticipate ahead of maybe the main market or whatever. Do you agree with that, or do you think that's a logical explanation? What are your thoughts
about whether or not
they'll, like, for example, if I think the dollar is going higher, I might sell gold first before trying to buy the dollar, because, you know, it's going to have similar effects to it. And I think that a lot of these products that are dollar denominated, oil, gold, and some of the other commodities, they've already taken the hit as if the dollar was much higher than it is right now.
I agree with that. Speaking of gold, you know, gold's been, just to focus on that for a second, gold's been, you know, kind of systematically pushed lower. And I think it's not quite due for a bounce yet, but it's getting close. If we get to the point where on Wednesday, when we expect a Fed decision. If it's lower into that decision, then I expect the Fed will not hike rates. I mean, most people don't think they're going to hike rates, but if gold's been pushed lower into that decision, then it's very likely to reverse to the upside, and that would mean that, you know, they're not, that we'd have a weaker dollar and that they won't hike. And the reverse is true also. So if gold is much stronger going into the decision, then I would expect it to reverse to the downside after the decision.
All right, but we know you don't follow the news, but there's no way the Fed's raising. But how about your gold special? Let's tell us about the gold special.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, you know, big picture, I don't think that gold has reached its final bottom. I have a very strong target support line that was never hit in December at the December lows. So we need to head lower in gold. I mean, I'm a gold bug. I don't want to see it happen, but that's, you know, what the chart says. So the gold special, we're going to send out a text message and an email when our target has been hit. It's a target line, and once we're within proximity to it, we'll send out the message, and we have to get it exactly right. So we have to be within 3% of the line for where the actual bottom takes place, and then we have to see a rally of at least 20% before we'll charge, and the charge is $49. Otherwise, the service is free.
So we got a risk-free trade of buying gold, and especially if you're a gold bug and you're going to wait for Matt's signal, how could you miss of getting his signal on something you want to buy anyways? I think that's a pretty good deal the way I look at it, huh? What do you think?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you know, look, if you want to be a buyer of gold anyways, I mean, you're going to wait for the signal from a guy like you, and you only got to pay for it if you're right. I mean, because people will buy gold anyways. You know, people are always buying gold. I mean, Jim Rickard says gold's going to 10,000. I mean, I always laugh at those things because, you know, I mean, certainly at someday gold might be 10,000, but there's a lot of levels in between here and 10,000 that would could hurt a lot of people before it ever got there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think he's counting on a currency crisis, which I think will happen. I just think it's just a matter of time. And how much time? So I mean, you know, we're looking at treasuries, and if the, you know, 35-year bull market in treasuries is over, you know, we're gonna get, you know, right now we're in a if you look at rates or treasuries, you know, treasuries in a topping process, rates are in a bottoming process, and you know, right now I think it's slow, but at some point I think it could get disorderly.
Yeah, listen, I just say this. I can see anything you say, but you don't put out numbers that are so far out of ridiculous unless you're trying to do something else. And again, that's just me. I you know, I like the way you mention it. You bring it up one level at a time. You got one number you're looking for. And that's just one of my pet peeves. But I am with my guy, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. He has been bringing us great information on a weekly basis for quite a while now and is always pretty much on target, at least in the right area, and always brings us his A game. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horde. We're going to stop by here for a break. Remember, when you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm will get you the download of the show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horde will be right back after the break with more from Matt Demeter, the Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. Make sure you go to his website and check out also his gold special. You know, really great stuff. And Matt, you always bring us real solid information. And I know you've been watching the Aussie dollar. And you know, the reason I bring it up is because I forgot to watch it. And I know you told us about it a couple of weeks ago. What's going on? Are we right or are we wrong?
No, we were right. We got it very close to the high. I think one day off the high. We sold short, and now we've covered. It's on some. It's not super strong support, but it's on you know, sort of what I see as minor support levels that I think could bounce it back up. So I think we're going to get. We got out because there's a decent chance of a bounce. If we get that bounce, we're going to re-short. That's the plan. It's highly correlated with gold, and it kind of fits with my thinking on gold. There might be a little bit more downside before we get a bounce, and then, you know, this is all short-term stuff, but longer term, I think Australian dollar is headed to new lows. The low of 68 cents I think that was back in December, January, I'm not sure, but I think we're definitely going to go lower. I shouldn't say definitely, but I believe we're going lower than 68 cents.
Well, so. from your work, you're definitely going lower. Doesn't always mean you're right, but that's one of the things I love about having you on is you just say it like it is, and if you're wrong, you say, hey, we covered, we took our loss, and we moved on. I mean, there's nothing better than saying, hey, I made a mistake, we didn't get it right, because if you can get it all right, you know, we would just all be sitting in our jockey shorts just counting our money, but of course, that's not the way that it works, and you know, when we look at like markets like oil, you know, I'm convinced in my eyes oil goes to 40 before it does anything to the positive side. What do you see?
Yeah, in oil, now that we've rolled to the November contract, we're looking for a bottom around 41.30, something like that. But there's a bigger pattern in play that I you know, just started to kind of show itself, and I think that, you know, it shows that it's going even lower. But for right now, and that would be significantly lower, by the way. That would be, you know, down into the mid 30s at least. But for right now, we were short up at 50, and we've covered a little over half, and now we're gonna look to cover the rest in the 41 to 42 area.
Yeah, and I can see that. Now I'm a big believer in commodities, especially, they always tend to go farther than you think they're going to go in one direction or the other. And I've been looking at 40 for a while as it got to 50. I mean, I've got it pretty much stuck in a range, but I'm not certainly as you know, detailed as you are. I mean, I look at the big range and I go, you know, around 40, I'd be looking to get in, which I'm still waiting to see. And I think we're going to see it. I mean, it looks to me like right now we're on a shade of a little bit of support here. But I do believe that the support will not hold. And again, I just think that you see markets work their way lower. And then, of course, as we switch over to some of the other commodities and into the grain space, grains kind of made their highs on last Monday and kind of worked their way down, but picked up at the end of the week. And it looks to me, in my eyes, and tell me if you agree or disagree, that they're all kind of making a little bit of a bottoming pattern down here, but with soybeans still really remaining in that $9.40 to $10 range for November, and the others really looking to, that they're like on the bottom, and I think that's pretty solid. What do you think?
I think so. I'm still waiting to see. But I think wheat is probably, you know, still in a very close to the bottom of wherever it's going to bottom. So like the bottom. As far as corn and soybeans, I'm kind of waiting to see a few things. In corn, I want to see a break above, I think it's $3.85 is my sort of line, where if we break above that, I'll feel confident that, much more confident that, because we have a pivot resistance area right up about where we are. If we break through 3.85, then I think we're looking, go higher. But I need to see that first. Otherwise, I think there could be one more significant leg down. But that's just the way.
No, I mean,
the aggregate of it, you know, using JJG, which is an ETF, that seems like it's very close to bottom. So.
No, I think it's definitely on the bottom. I like JJG. And are you, when you refer to corn or any of the grain, are you looking at the spot or are you looking at a particular month?
I'm looking at a spot index, which isn't exactly the spot price. I'm also looking at the futures, and those patterns do. I mean, they're definitely oversold. I mean, we should be getting bounces here. I just need to see, to be sure that we're not going to get this additional leg down. I want to see us break a little bit higher first. It won't be, you know, it's not that much higher that we need to run up to be in the clear. But if corn can, you know, get past 385.
I mean, so 385 would be like December corn is 336. So you're talking about like December, or are you talking about March now? I mean, there's a difference because it's so much higher. So,
yeah, I don't have that chart in front of me, but basically what I'm looking for is a pop above, I think the high of, say, all of August, wherever that is.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got you. No problem. I mean, again, I'm not trying to pin you down to a specific. I just, I can, you know, like the August high in December corn was like 345. So We're right there.
I think it's 345 that I'm talking about.
Yeah, so 345 was the August high, which would make sense. And
yeah, 34. No, I just pulled up my chart now. It's 345 is the level, not 385.
Okay, I knew it was kind of high. Well, yeah. I mean, obviously a 12% move. I mean, you know, it's hard to wait 12% in a
3. Yeah, no, you know what? No, 345. We get above there. That's the level.
And I think that's
what we wrote about this. I was just trying to keep all these numbers in my head, and that one wasn't quite right.
I wonder why you only got 75 numbers you're trying to. You know, I wrote about it on Saturday. You know, I said corn is kind of stuck between, you know, 320 and 345, and we need to get through 345. But, you know, I look at that, and I say, you know, it looks pretty good. It's consolidating down here, kind of at a bottom area. I mean, a heck of a bounce off of 315, and you know, yeah, listen, it's made, you know, an 8% bounce from the bottom now, and you know, we'll see. Now, what about the livestock? You know, that was really ugly. Now, I know that you were looking for a little bit lower prices in cattle, and they did finally flush. You know, got down to 99 and change in the future for the live cattle. What do you think there?
Well, cattle, I think last time we talked about it, we were bullish. And I don't know if it was the time before as well, but we bought into I was bullish on cattle. I was bearish on hogs, at least if we broke support, which we did last week, and then it just sort of plummeted. I think the plummet action in hogs is not over, but I think in cattle, I think it's pretty clear. I think we can go. I it's clear sailing, so to speak. I think we can go higher in cattle.
Yeah, I think that I look at it in the two different, the live cattle, I think, you know, 109 is a key level here, but I think that once we got through 106 was pretty good, and I think the feeders are kind of trying to push through 133. Hogs, to me, now, I thought hogs 58 was a pretty good number, but they flunked that like it was nothing. I think now is a real crucial area for the hog space here. I think they can hold here. I'm playing it that they can hold here, but if they break lower, I think it's going to get really ugly. And it's already been really ugly. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think we're looking for roughly 50 now, or a little bit below. Again, this is another chart I don't have in front of me, but I do think there's about 10% more downside in hogs, not much more, 10 to 15%. And then I think we're looking at a really strong bottom.
Yeah, I mean, again, at some point here, you know, one thing nice about commodities versus anything else is they find a level, and sometimes they're, you know, high prices cure high prices, low pure prices cure low prices. We're still going to eat, I think, unless we're going to get that genetically modified stuff from Monsanto and that deal. But so at the end of the day, now I know you don't watch the news. The Fed will not raise rates is my prediction. But does that mean anything to you? Or you just strictly wait to see how that plays in the chart?
Well, I agree. I don't think they're going to raise. The only question is, you know, is there a way that we can know ahead of time what the reaction to it will be? You know, if they raise, and I think, you know, it's a negative for stock market, and a negative for gold and silver, and obviously a positive for the dollar. The best way I know of, you know, knowing just before the decision is, what does gold do? Because gold almost always does the exact opposite of whatever it does right before the decision. And that's because there's, you know, the banks, they know the decision ahead of time. That's my contention.
Yeah, they do, because they're part of the, they own the freaking Fed. That is,
they own the Fed. They're the shareholders we don't know about.
That is,
aren't publicly, you know, disclosed.
The
so
world,
anyway, they know. And so if, you know, they're heavily short gold, so they're going to, you know, move gold in a way that, you know, works to their advantage.
The world, according to Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. Matt, as always, thank you so much.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Todd.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Hordes, LibertyTalk.fm. We'll get you a download. We're running right up against the button. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Hordes. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Hordes. Put some feel good
in my soul. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.